County Division. Family and Children Social Services. Mr. Newman?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. This is an employment discrimination case concerning an African-American woman who claims that the Vigo County Division of Family and Children, Family and Social Services Administration, FSSA, a state agency of the state of Indiana, refused to interview or hire her on three different occasions due to her race. And this is a case in which the standard McDonnell-Douglas test was invoked. At this stage of the proceedings, both parties do agree that Ms. McGoffney made a prima facie case for both the year 2000 and the year 2001 employment applications, which are at issue. FSSA, for both of those, provided what looks like at least facially legitimate, non-discriminatory reasons. So we're at the point now where the burden has shifted to Ms. McGoffney to show pretext, and that's what we're arguing over, is whether or not these proffered reasons were pretextual. There are three issues before the court at this point in time. First, were FSSA's reasons for not interviewing or hiring Ms. McGoffney in year 2000 pretextual? And also, second, were there reasons for not hiring or interviewing her in year 2001 pretextual? And then the third separate issue was Ms. McGoffney's October 29, 1999 employment application included in that year 2000 EEOC chart? With respect to the pretextual arguments, it is Ms. McGoffney's position that FSSA, throughout this entire proceeding, set forth a bunch of different shifting, conflicting, and retracted justifications. And these are classically can be used to show pretext. Also, in certain cases, it showed deceit, and some of the reasons given were not worthy of credence. And I'll address the July 6, 2000 employment application first. I'm going to take the court through the different shifts FSSA has done, and first we'll start with their interrogatory answers, in which they were asked, what were the reasons why you did not give Ms. McGoffney an interview? And they provided three reasons. First, an instability in past work history. Second, that she had been terminated by four C's, which was one of her employers, that they say works closely with FSSA. And thirdly, that she had previously been employed as a food stamp caseworker with Vigo County back in 1989. In their summary judgment memorandum filed in their material facts not in dispute, they took a different tack. Here, they set forth two different reasons why they said they did not hire her in year 2000. First, they said that FSSA had filled the position with an existing part-time caseworker, 5, and that FSSA did not even conduct interviews for that particular position. So they abandoned the first three they had set forth in the interrogatory, adopted two new reasons. In their reply in support of motion for summary judgment, they then resurrected the termination from 4Cs as a reason for not interviewing Ms. McGoffney. And now, as we stand here in their appellate brief, we get three more reasons set forth by FSSA. First, that Ms. McGoffney nearly walked out of her 1989 FSSA job without any notice. Second, that Ms. McGoffney was not forthright in her July 2000 application about why she left 4Cs. And thirdly, that the individual hired in the year 2000 was supposedly, quote, much more qualified than Ms. McGoffney. And what you have here is clearly a case of shifting, conflicting, and retracted justifications, which clearly show that you have a case of pretext here. You start off with three reasons in interrogatory. They're abandoned by the time FSSA is filing summary judgment, and they adopt two new ones. In response to Ms. McGoffney's reply to that, they resurrect 4Cs, and then as we get to this appellate level, we get three new ones coming out of the woodwork as reasons why they didn't want to hire Ms. McGoffney. Clearly, FSSA can't decide why it did not want to interview her in year 2000. Furthermore, we have the concept of falsity, which indicates pretext. FSSA claimed that it did not interview anyone for the year 2000 position, yet in its interrogatory answer number 8, FSSA admits that it interviewed Sharla Maris, who is the part-time FSSA employee, for that position. So they didn't just say, Sharla Maris, you're working for us, you're hired. They chose to interview her. And also, this was a position that had been posted in the job bank, set forth for the public. Public, send us your applications. We're considering everybody for this position. So clearly you have a case of falsity in their answers, which also indicates pretext. The termination by 4C's issue is one in which it's not worthy of credence. You've got three different witnesses that gave affidavits on behalf of FSSA, and each one says the same thing. We became aware that Ms. McGoffney was terminated by 4C's, an agency which works closely with FSSA. And that's all it said. Now, a person can be terminated for any one of a number of reasons, none of which are blameworthy. The government lost special funding for the job. The budget came in under what it used to be. They've shifted their job classifications, and they've eliminated that. Others also that have nothing to do with a person's job performance or anything else. And nowhere in the summary judgment materials did they say, we were aware that there was a bad reason or a valid reason why she was terminated, only that we became aware she was terminated. That's not a reason for not even considering somebody and giving them an interview. In addition, Ms. McGoffney herself had provided FSSA a reason as to why she was terminated. She said she would not countenance fraud and abuse going on in the agency. That was set forth in one of her job applications. They were aware of that. So here you have FSSA aware that she had been wrongfully terminated from her job, and yet they trot out the fact that she was terminated as a reason for not wanting to hire her. And we also have the same type of inconsistent positions with respect to the February 16, 2001 employment application. In the summary judgment memorandum, FSSA stated that there was an inconsistent work history and also that she was terminated by 4Cs. In the appellate brief, they brought up those other three that I mentioned before for the very first time. And clearly, these are all indications that FSSA cannot decide for year 2000 or year 2001 why it did not want to hire Ms. McGoffney. Lastly, with respect to the issue of the 1029-99 employment application and whether that was included in her year 2000 EEOC charge, the trial court said that it was not. But if you look at the record, you see that you do not have a situation in which Ms. McGoffney left that out. On pages 30 and 31 of the supplemental appendix, you see the EEOC charge, in particular, page 31, in which she states, you know, the respondent refused to hire me on at least 10 different occasions. On one occasion, I applied for a job in Terre Haute. I've applied for many different positions. She uses the plural. She never tries to pin down any one particular instance. So while she did put a date of 7700 on the front page, clearly she wasn't talking about any specific date. She was talking about all the different occasions in which she had been denied. And I see my time has passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Summary judgment was proper because Kelly McGoffney did not mention her 1999 failure to hire claim in her July 18th EEOC charge, July 18th, 2000, that is. Second, because she has failed to identify any meaningful evidence for her new pretext theories with regard to her 2000 and 2001 failure to hire claims. Fourth, with respect to the 1999 claim, the charge, the EEOC charge, that my colleague just mentioned, doesn't have any specifics about what it is she's complaining about, except for the date, the July 7th date. She doesn't mention anything happening in October of 99 or at any other time. Now, this court has recognized that oftentimes in EEOC charges, there will be extra facts sometimes included that don't relate to a specific complaint, but instead are background and context. And the vague references to positions and occasions here is just that. It's just a general contextual statement. And there's no basis on which the EEOC or FSSA or anybody else would know what she was referring to by that. One other point on that. McGoffney does not argue that there's any relationship between what happened in October 1999 and what happened in 2000 and 2001, which is sometimes a way to read an EEOC complaint. But I think it couldn't here, first of all, because there are separate decisions, separate hiring decisions, and so that would fall outside that doctrine. But also, again, McGoffney doesn't argue that point. With respect to the 2000 failure to hire claims, McGoffney didn't bring this point up in the district court about how somehow FSSA's reasons had shifted over time. She mentioned in her response to the summary judgment brief that the reasons given in the interrogatory responses couldn't be right because FSSA had not learned of the 4C's termination until after the decision for July 2000. She also argued that the work history rationale identified there was belied by having FSSA's having interviewed her twice in 1999. But now she's arguing something new, that FSSA has changed its position over time and that FSSA made inconsistent statements with respect to whether it interviewed anybody for the position. The district court, I think it's important to note, did not have a chance to consider either of those two theories. And those are legal theories, not factual theories. They're based on undisputed facts for this purpose and amount to legal theories. Now, regardless of that, FSSA promoted an intermittent employee in a so-called PAC 5 position, essentially just changing the status of that position, of that employee from intermittent to permanent. This is somebody who had been doing the same job that this opening required. So the 4C's explanation is really just a supplemental explanation to the extent that it did motivate what happened in July. And I will note that there is some lack of clarity about when FSSA learned about the 4C's termination and when it acted on the July 2000 decision, because they may not match up in terms of timing. But I think what we have here is a case where FSSA is dealing with several decisions not to hire McGoffney at one time and trying to sort through the different explanations and on a different timeline. Furthermore, the 1999 interviews do not give rise to a reasonable inference of pretext. There was more going on in 2000 than was going on in 1999. And I think, if anything, the 1999 interviews show that FSSA was taking McGoffney seriously and was wanting to talk to her. By the time 2000 rolled around, though, her application, regardless of what it mentioned about 4Cs, did indicate she had been discharged. And furthermore, there was the intermittent employee, Charla Maris, who was already training for that job. The interrogatory statement about interviewing Charla Maris is not very probative, I think, here of inconsistency. There's sort of an attempt here to show, well, you said you didn't interview anybody, but then you indicate you interviewed Charla Maris. That's the only person that they talked to, and that would be something reasonable for an employer to do, and they didn't go outside of that. There was a focus the entire time on hiring Charla Maris and nobody else, because they knew that this was the person who was learning these skills. With respect to the 2001 failure to hire claim, again, this idea that somehow FSSA had to conduct a fairness investigation of whether she was fired or otherwise terminated from 4Cs, first of all, did not come up in the district court, as far as I can tell, and the judge didn't have a chance to address it. But I think even beyond that, this puts too much of a burden on employers, and it's inconsistent with this court's repeated holdings that these don't have to be good reasons. They just have to be valid reasons. And it's, you know, if an employer receives an application indicating a discharge without much explanation, if any, about that, they are entitled to use exercise business judgment in not hiring that person. They're not required to go out and investigate exactly what happened. Now, it's important also to look at McGoffney's actual explanation and then to understand the logic of her argument. This is a supplemental appendix at page 35. She indicates on her application that the reason for termination was, quote, change in political climate. There were a lot of issues pertaining to fraud and abuse, and instead of trying to combat it, I was terminated. Okay. First, McGoffney would have would suggest that a reasonable juror could infer from that statement, first, that FSSA fully understood the reason for McGoffney's termination. Second, that FSSA fully valued and believed that explanation as somehow putting McGoffney in the best possible light and was willing to overcome a termination because it felt so good about what she had done. And third, that FSSA nonetheless rejected McGoffney because of her race and then later seized upon that termination to cover its tracks. That's an awful lot to ask. I mean, those are not reasonable inferences. And it doesn't put anybody on notice to try to offer a truncated explanation on an application. FSSA was entitled to exercise business judgment and not so worried about that. The final point I have is that even if there are some technical ways that a plaintiff has met the burden of trying to show pretext, and I would stress here that McGoffney is not. She's at most acknowledged some consistent reasons that are multiple in this case that FSSA could have relied on or did rely on. Then, even at that, if it's just a weak issue of fact with respect to pretext, then the plaintiff can't get past summary judgment if the overall context shows there's no real sense of discrimination about the case. And here, I think that the facts line that up, and that is the sense in which we are using these other reasons. We're not trying to talk about actualities or shifting reasons here. All we're talking about in this argument in our brief is the overall context of it. Now, part of the context is, again, FSSA had interviewed McGoffney twice in 1999, showing that it had taken her candidacy seriously, but that it had not wanted to or didn't have a position for which they thought that she would be a good match by 2000 and 2001. And also because they hired people who fit the bill. Charla Maris in 2000, who was in training for that position, was the intermittent employee. And in 2001, Lisa Weilman, who spoke Spanish, which was one of the needs that FSSA had. Now, these are not inconsistent explanations. These focus instead on the people that FSSA did hire, as opposed to the reasons not to hire McGoffney. But they're all fully consistent with one another, and they just help complete the picture that there is no reasonable basis for believing that this is a decision based on discrimination. Oh, I did want to correct one thing that came up in my brief. With respect to that fairness investigation, we've taken the position that this was not properly presented to the district court. We did acknowledge, however, that McGoffney herself raised something similar that had some echoes of this in her motion for reconsideration. And I think we miscited the page of the defendant's appendix on that. Page 33, I think, is where she says something about that. If there are no questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Newman.
Let me quickly respond to three points. First, with regard to the 1999 application, my opponent said that Ms. McGoffney provided no specifics in her EEOC complaint, and EEOC would not know what she was referring to. Well, I find that to be disingenuous, because FSSA is the ones who filed for the summary judgment. They chose not to put their response to the EEOC charge into the record or the FSSA investigation report in the record. All inferences flow in Ms. McGoffney's favor. Given the general nature of her allegations, it should be found that she did include the 1999 application in there. With respect to his statement that there were new legal theories being brought up in the appeal, no, that's not the case at all. The theories are the same, pretext and shifting explanations. Nothing has changed there. There's some new arguments in support of that, but those are all based on what's already in the summary judgment record, not new theories.
You need to just state the third ground.
Thank you, Your Honor. The third ground would be that all reasonable inferences do go in Ms. McGoffney's favor, and since we are in an employment discrimination case, the rule is that they must be applied rigorously. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.